His disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." And he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him to eat, nor those who were with him, but only for the priest? Or have you not read in the law how the Sabbath, the priest in the temple profaned the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." He went on from there and entered into their synagogue. And a man was there with a withered hand. And they asked him, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" So that they might accuse him. And he said to them, "Which one of you who has a sheep, if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not take hold of it and lift it out? Or how much more value is a man than a sheep? So it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." He then said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And the man stretched it out, and it was restored, healthy, like the other. But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him about how they might destroy him. Well, the question of the Sabbath and of Sabbath keeping is a subject over which oceans of ink have been spilled. It has been a very controversial subject, and there's a wide spectrum of opinion on it. You're all familiar with Seventh-day Adventists. They worship on Saturday, which, strictly speaking, is the seventh day of the Jewish calendar. Now, there are others. There is even a denomination of Baptists known as Seventh-day Baptists. They're not Adventists. They're Baptists, but they meet in worship on Saturday because they believe that is the Sabbath. Now, along the other end of the spectrum are those who feel that Sunday is just another day like any other day of the week and has no particular significance. And there are those in the middle who feel that the Jewish Sabbath, which was the day of worship, was transferred to the first day of the week because Christians met on the day of Christ's resurrection. And so the question is asked, was the Sabbath instituted by God to be a perpetual day of observance since the day of creation, which, if you read the opening chapters of Genesis, the first time the word holy is found in the Bible is in reference to this day. God set it apart. And going through the books of Moses, particularly in the book of Exodus, in chapter 32, there is a specific delineation about what you can and cannot do on that day, and that the death penalty was enforced for those who violated it. So you can see God took it very seriously. Now, you can well imagine that after the Jews had returned from the Babylonian captivity and they had to deal with the fact that they were now surrounded by a Gentile culture, that they would do their utmost to preserve their distinctive Jewishness. And what could be more distinctive than how they observed Sunday or Saturday, the Sabbath? And this account we have of Jesus in Matthew 12 talks about a conflict that arose. And we shouldn't be surprised, because if ever there is something that is deadlier than just blind zeal, it's religious zeal. In fact, the Apostle Paul says the Jews had a zeal without knowledge. And we have witnessed in our lifetime how religious zealots can be a threat to your very existence. People who take their religion serious, and we ought to congratulate people who do take their religion serious, but if that religion is misguided, it has disastrous consequences. And here we have an occasion, on more than one occasion, in which the Pharisee took umbrage over Jesus and the Sabbath. Now, we're told that they were going through a grain field, and the disciples, being hungry, began to scoop up grain in their hand. And by the way, we're told in Deuteronomy, God says, look, you can go through your neighbor's grain field with your hand, but you can't take a sickle in there. In other words, the law allowed for such things. Now, here's what the Pharisees did. They said, look here. By the virtue of collecting grain, you are reaping. That's work. And by rubbing your fingers together to separate the chaff from the grain, that's additional work. And so you can see how the reasoning went. If you do such a thing on the Sabbath, you are violating it, and therefore you have broken the law of God. Now, what is Christ's response? Well, he does, first of all, go to the Old Testament. And he used the example of David and his men when David was fleeing and how they ate holy bread. And yet, he was properly fit to do it because who was David after all when he was fleeing on that occasion? He is the king of Israel. But the really coup de grace that Jesus levels at them is he points to the temple. Now, this is perhaps the key to understanding this passage. He says, why is it that the priestly Levites who function in their capacity as priests are working on the Sabbath day, and yet they're guiltless? And then he says this, something greater than the temple is here. Now, notice how this argument follows. He says, the Son of Man is Lord even. That little word even should not escape our attention. It may be translated also or as well. But what's he saying? And notice he uses the expression the Son of Man. Where does that originate from? Now, there are people who think that the title Son of Man is the counterpart to the Son of God. Son of God refers to his deity. Son of Man refers to his humanity. No, it doesn't. That is an Old Testament expression which is found in the book of Daniel, in which he says he saw this great majestic being that he refers to as the Son of Man. And Jesus identifies himself as that glorious individual. And he says the Son of Man is Lord even also, and therefore he can do whatever he wants to do on the Sabbath day. Now, that didn't satisfy them. Jesus goes into the synagogue. It is on the Sabbath day, and there's a man with a withered hand. And so Jesus asked the question, or they asked Jesus the question, is it proper to do a healing on the Sabbath day? Because you see, Jesus had been doing miracles. This they could not deny. And they're trying to catch him. And so he answers, if you have a sheep and it falls into a ditch on the Sabbath day, will you not retrieve it? Is it not even more proper to do good on the Sabbath day? And then he told the man, hold out your hand, and he healed him. Now, the text tells us that from that time on, the Pharisees plotted how they might, the NIV reads, kill him. It's actually a much stronger word, how they might destroy him. It is a word that means to completely eradicate. They had an agenda now. And they began looking for any opportunity. There was another occasion, remember, in which Jesus saw a man who was crippled, and he said to that man, stand up and take your mat and go. Well, the Pharisees got upset because he's carrying his mattress around. Did you know that the Old Testament, and it's, again, I've made allusion to studying the Bible with themes. What the Bible has to say about the Sabbath is just overwhelming. We're told in the book of Isaiah that it is a day of delight. It's something that we're to rejoice in. But the Pharisees had made it a burden. It had become encrusted with traditions of men. And on many occasions, Jesus had to reprimand the Jews, the Pharisees in particular, because their traditions now substituted for the authority of God's word. By the way, that is something that none of us are immune to. Growing up as I did, in what was referred to as a fundamentalist Baptist church, there were certain taboos that would be met with strict frowning. See if any of you can resonate with this. Women could not wear slacks to church. Makeup was frowned upon. When I was a student at Christian Heritage College back in the early 70s, I was elected as vice president of the student body. And the girls requested that the dress code allow for them wearing slacks. Now, you may think that this is absurd, but back then, that was unheard of. Women do not wear slacks. And so myself and the president of the student body met with the president of the school, who was none other than Tim LaHaye. And we said, we have a request. And he sat down, and he was a man of short stature, and he was across from the table at the cafeteria that we were eating lunch together. And we said, the ladies have requested that they be allowed, especially during, and by the way, you may not think this, but in the winter months in San Diego, the mornings can be downright cool. And the girls want to know, can they wear slacks? And his response was, no, Next question. Well, that was it. They have since, I understand, amended that law. But there were all kinds of taboos that you could see had good intentions when they started. You know, playing cards was associated with gambling. So cards in any shape, form, or fashion were frowned upon. Movies. Now, this is before they had R-rated movies. But going to the movies was looked upon as worldly. And that if you were really going to be a sanctified individual, you didn't get involved in that kind of stuff because that's a sign of worldliness. And then what I'm saying is that all kinds of societies can develop guidelines which had good intentions when they started, and now they become something that is just unheard of. A good friend of mine, his grandfather had been a pastor in a rural Methodist church back in the turn of the century. And he said they decided that it would be a good thing if the young people didn't come into physical contact with each other by holding hands, because that could lead to something else. And so the group decided that the best way to avoid that is to have the young people all wear gloves. That way they can hold hands without touching skin. And it became something as such that if you were seen not wearing gloves, you were highly suspected of having ulterior motives if you were going to hold hands with your girlfriend. And so the young people had to come to church with gloves on. And as you know, what are they wearing those gloves for? That's because if they touch hands, they won't have physical touch. But you can see how this develops in human society. And the Jews, as I said, anxious to protect their identity, had encrusted the commandments with all kinds of rules and regulations. For example, in the Jewish Talmud, it said that if you found a lice in your child's hair, you could kill it, but not a flea. Because, you see, a flea is a parasite, and therefore, or a predator. So you cannot kill a flea, but you could kill a lice. And you see, this kind of stuff just multiplied. So that by the time of Jesus, the Jews had elaborate commandments surrounding the individual commandments. The humorous story is told by one of my former professors at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, Wilbur Smith. He was professor of English Bible. And he was an avid reader, just read all the time. And on one summer, he had an occasion to go over to Israel on an archaeological dig. And he went. And one of the people that was digging on this dig was a famous Jewish archaeologist, Joseph. I think his name was Halowitz or something like that. But this guy was a world-renowned Jewish archaeologist, and Dr. Smith was a guest at this professor's home. And Saturday morning, Dr. Smith surmised they would not be going out to the dig because it is the Jewish Sabbath. And so he was sitting at the breakfast table talking with Professor Halowitz, and he asked him about a particular book that he had written. And the professor said, yes, it's up there on my talk shelf. He said, well, could I see it? He said, no, it's too heavy. We would be breaking the Sabbath if we picked that book up. So you couldn't reach up on the shelf and pull a book down because that would be breaking the Sabbath. The point that Jesus is underlining is that the Sabbath was not made so that God's servants would be encumbered. The man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. Now, I like the way the Heidelberg Catechism puts this. It says that the Sabbath, primarily and first of all, is said something that we are devoted to public worship. Notice it says that the ministry of the Word and schools, they're talking about what we would call Sunday schools, educational opportunity for our children, they should be maintained. And furthermore, it is the day of resting from our own evil activities and devoting ourselves to God. Now, next week, I'll get into some of the particulars, and I've given you some historical surveys about how views on the Sabbath have come down from the Reformation on. The Heidelberg Catechism is, strictly speaking, not a Sabbatarian document. If you compare it with the Westminster Standards, you'll see there's an enormous difference. You're all familiar with the movie Chariots of Fire? Won an Academy Award back in the 70s now, maybe? But it's featuring that noted Olympic sprinter Eric Liddell, who was a son of missionaries in China. But he was from what country? Scotland. And he was raised in the Church of Scotland. And they adhered very strictly to the Westminster Confession of Faith. And when Eric Liddell found out that he was scheduled to run on Saturday in an event that he was favored to win, he said, "I cannot do it. I will not violate my conscience." Now, I can commend him for that. One of the most famous professors at Westminster Seminary was John Murray, who was from Scotland. And he was a strict Sabbatarian. He would not violate the Sabbath as it was laid out in the Westminster Confession. And that, by the way, if that's your conviction, you're free to have them. And I will not try to violate a man's conscience if he says, "I'm not going to do this." For example, there are certain things that I don't do on the Lord's Day. This is the Lord's Day. One of the things that we find in Scripture is that Christians met on the first day of the week. It is never called the Sabbath, not until centuries later. They always called it the Lord's Day. It celebrates the fact of the resurrection. And so Christ rose from the dead on the first day of the week, and that's the day of the week that the church began to meet. But if your convictions are that Sunday has now become equivalent to the Jewish Sabbath, you're in good company. There are a lot of good people that believe that. And I was mentioning Professor Murray. There's a humorous story told around Westminster Seminary, where I was, about Professor Murray, who was a bachelor. Didn't get married until he was 78 years old. The founder of Westminster Seminary was none other than J. Gretchen Machen. And he, too, was a bachelor. And they worshipped at the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, which is right across the street. My wife and I have been there on many occasions. Small little church building. And one of the other professors worshipped there was Ned Stonehouse. Now, Ned Stonehouse was a very gifted athlete. In fact, he was so good in college that the St. Louis Cardinals tried to sign him to a Major League Baseball contract. He was that good. Well, Machen was also an avid sports fan. He loved to go to the Princeton football games. He loved to go see the Philadelphia Phillies play. And so on this particular Sunday, the Stonehouses had had Professor Murray and Professor Machen over for Sunday lunch. And the story is told that as they're sitting around the table, Machen and Stonehouse are talking about their favorite teams and their favorite players. And Mrs. Stonehouse noticed that Professor Murray was not engaged in the conversation. And so suddenly she turned to him and said, "Professor Murray, who is your favorite baseball player?" And Professor Murray said it with his distinctive Scottish accent, "I do not discuss baseball on the Sabbath," and went back to eating. But here you have Murray and two of his colleagues. One has a particular conviction about what he can and cannot do on the Sabbath, and the other two don't feel that's in any way obligation that they have to perform. It just shows that there are good people, and I don't want to offend anybody, but it's my position that the Lord's Day never was intended to be a replacement for the Sabbath. We'll look next week at two passages in Paul's writings in which he highlights the fact that the word Sabbath and observing Sabbath days is something that passed away after the coming of Christ, and he has fulfilled it. And what we see in this passage is that Christ identifying himself as the Son of Man who is Lord of the Sabbath. He is Lord and is free to do it because he has fulfilled its ceremonial aspects in himself. And so what we have in this time in our history is the freedom to worship the Lord on the Lord's Day and not be bound to worship the Lord on the seventh day. As the elders and deacons come forward now, let us be prepared to worship the Lord of the Sabbath in the remembering him in his work on our behalf in the Lord's table.